Coming up in just a moment, we'll have Out of the Box with some guests today from the American Rainwater Catchment Association, some candidates for KIUC, the election for our co-op coming up, and, of course, your issues, your news, and what's going on in your world, all on KKCR. KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, and live across the World Wide Web at kkcr.org. Made possible by listeners just like you in partnership with these fine underwriters.
Kalaheo Wellness Center, natural pain relief services, providing gentle chiropractic acupuncture, therapeutic massage, nutritional wellness, postural training, cold laser therapy, and spinal decompression. Open Monday through Friday, now a second location in Kapa'a, 822-0711, or Southside Center at 332-5580, or online at kalaheochiropractic.com.
HawaiiGaga.com, Hawaii Vacation Rental Directory and Vacation Guide. A proud sponsor of Kauai Community Radio, Hawaii Gaga also publishes the Kauai GPS Tour Guide, an audio tour of Kauai for iPhones. More information online at HawaiiGaga.com.
And thank you so much for supporting Kauai Community Radio. Thanks to Kalaheo Chiropractic and Hawaii Gaga. And if you have not had a chance to help us thrive, well then, cruise on over to kkcr.org and click on that donate button. Not the donut button, but the donate button. We heard a track at the end of Marin's show. That was by The Waifs, yeah? From Little Things. And, you know, I think that's true. This is Jonathan Jay. Thanks so much for tuning in this afternoon at KKCR and sharing your afternoon with us here at Out of the Box. A lot of things going on in the world, and the telephone lines are open at 826-7771. Let's see, recent things. We had our Ahupua'a Council meetings last week in Puna, and that was really fantastic. I did that. I did the station ID. I'm good. I did. Laura's wrong this time, this one time. No, I did say KKCR Hanalei and KAQA Kilauea. I didn't mention that we're coming out at 90.9 in Hanalei, 91.9 FM island-wide, 92.7 in Anahola and Moloa'a, 104.7 on Oahu, and 95.1 on the digital cable, which I don't really know what that is. But maybe you do if that's how you're listening to us. I also want to welcome our listeners listening from around the world. Let's see, we've got people in California, Canada, Massachusetts, New England, Nebraska, Oregon, Japan, Tokyo. Thank you so much for tuning in from all around the world. You know, we're really blessed to have this local community resource because we not only get to speak about the issues that are important to us here on the airwaves of the community, but we get people calling in from out around the watery world that we live on. And we're going to be talking about water, a couple exciting things coming up about that. And I was mentioning a moment ago about the Ahupua'a Councils. The Aha Moku organization, which is a statewide group designed to foster the traditional, customary, and generationally sustainable ideas and land use and resource management practices of the indigenous Kanaka Maoli, or the Hawaiian people, to bring their wisdom into the 21st century because, oh, we're desperately in need of it. And if you're interested in participating in that kind of process, where you live, in your part of the island, in your moku, your district, well, there's six districts around the island, and not one of them is near you. You're in one. So nobody has to travel too far. and you can hook up with your neighbors and meet the kupuna in your neighborhood and begin to learn more about the place where we all are, which is kind of exciting. We're broadcasting to you from the North Shore. That's the Moku of Halelea. Halelea, that means house of beauty and pleasure. Basically, it was like the super groovy part of the island. Even the Hawaiians back in the day knew this was a special place among special places. All our places are special, and all of them have names, and the names explain to you qualities of that place. So if you learn these things, you have an enriched experience of where you are. You have a better understanding. If you want to get involved in the Ahamoku councils and the Ahupua'a councils, you can go online and get more information at ahamoku.org. That's ahamoku.org. And if you have any questions specifically about that, I'd be happy to help you out myself. You can email me at Jonathan J. My email address is jjkawaii@gmail.org. That's jjkawaii@gmail.com. I think I said org a moment ago. I meant .com. Right. So, what's going on in the world? 826-7771. If you have any announcements or upcoming meetings that you want to share with other listeners in the community that you can't quite yell loud enough to get to across the other side of that ridge, KKCR is a great tool for you to use as a community communication vehicle. So anything that you want to share, please do call in 826-7771. I'm only going to take calls for a short time because we've got a guest in the studio, Tim Pope from the American Rainwater Catchment System Association. And he's going to be speaking to us about an upcoming rainwater catchment workshop in Lihue tomorrow and Saturday. So that's he's got a ton of information, maybe a metric acre foot or more. I don't know. But we're going to be talking about water and how to use it and how to preserve it and how to conserve it. So that'll be coming up next. I wanted to touch upon just a couple of national and international points real quick. And that is about elections. I don't know if any of you guys were listening to Felicia's shows in the last couple of weeks. She's been talking a little bit about Bibi Netanyahu in Israel. They've got a big election coming up there. And, of course, he was grandstanding in the House of Representatives, sort of thumping his positions and using it as an opportunity to campaign in a way that nobody else can. It's a pretty fantastic campaign backdrop. But, you know, if anyone has been following that and you have any updates, I'd be very curious to know how he's faring in the polls as the Israeli electorate gets closer to making their election. Wouldn't it be funny if Mr. Netanyahu was encouraged to step down and go away? What if he gets voted out of office? I think that will be pretty interesting, a pretty interesting event. Another interesting event, election-wise, is recently in Chicago, they had a runoff for the mayor's election. And if you can recall, the fellow who is the present mayor in Chicago was recently the chief of staff for the Obama administration. And when the Daley machine termed out of office, he went into Rahm Emanuel. He raced back home to Chicago and had like a lightning-fast election and took control of the city, and evidently, he's been even more corrupt than the infamous Daley machines, which is kind of staggering. But in a recent runoff election, which is the first time ever in the nonpartisan elections they have in Chicago, Rahm Emanuel, the sitting mayor, did not receive a majority of the votes. So there's going to be a second election. That's pretty shocking. That's not the way the big machine's supposed to rumble. But I always really love it when things don't work out the way the big boys want them to all the time, because usually the big boys are in it for themselves, and that leaves the 99% of us out in the cold. I'm hoping that we can bridge that divide and we can get to 100% solutions, and we can all stop fighting and all begin uniting, because there's so much good work that needs to be done. Speaking of good work, we're going to transition now to our guest in the studio for the next half an hour or so, Tim Pope. Tim Pope is from the American Rainwater Catchment Society Administration. Is that right? System. Oh, hold on a second. Let me get your mic here. There we go.
Systems Association.
I got the letters right, though.
Yeah, it's an awkward name.
Well, but the critical thing is if people want to learn more about it, they can go to ARCSA.org, yeah? A-R-C-S-A. So you are on islands. You just got here, what, yesterday?
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to Kauai. Welcome back, yeah?
Back. Yeah, been here before.
Fantastic. That's one of my most pinnacly favorite things about this island, returning home.
Yes, after a fashion, yes.
Yeah, and you can't come back home unless you leave, so it makes it worth the price.
I'm an islander in my own right, but far different than you folks are here, because the island I lived on for 20 years was only a 20-mile ferry ride to America.
Oh, and where was that?
San Juan Island, Washington.
Oh, that's a beautiful set of islands out there. I've been there myself several times, and the way they got the pines and the fir trees, the way they're bumpy, and the sound, the Puget Sound, maybe it's a different kind of salt body of water than people are familiar with here. Maybe you could describe the Puget Sound or the Salish Sea.
The Salish Sea. Nobody water skis. In the winter, the water's 44 degrees.
Ouch.
In the summer, it goes up to a balmy 47.
Hmm.
So.
And what's the surf like?
None. If there's no storm going on, since we're inside the other islands, it's just like a big lake that goes up and down 12 feet a day.
Yeah, see, that's the thing that's really, and that's really different about the tides here as well. We have, our tides go up and down about a foot.
Yeah.
But we have, some of the best surf in the world. The Puget Sound is an interior sea. It's like a long series of fingers of the ocean. So, and then because of the way the tides work, slamming up against one continent and going against the other, tides on the mainland are really big, but out here in the middle of the ocean, it's really small.
Well, and especially as you get further north, up in southeast Alaska, the tides will be close to 20 feet.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
It makes you plan ahead.
It does, but we're not going to be talking about saltwater, are we?
Indirectly, because that's been one of the drivers of what I've been doing. I've done most of my work in the San Juan Islands because we're little rocks covered with clay. We only get 20 inches of rainfall a year because of the rain shadow of the Olympic Mountains.
Right. Everybody thinks it's all rainy up there, but yeah, you're behind a mountain range.
It's a myth we like to preserve. We tell everybody that it rains all the time in Seattle, and maybe they'll stay in California.
Yeah, but that worked for me.
Yeah, but we have wells that are minimal because the rainfall is so slight, and about half of them are going to saltwater now because people are overdrawing them.
Oh, okay. Well, that's no good.
So that's what's driven my business. Your well goes saltwater, you don't have a well anymore.
So what do you do?
You can do rainfall catchment in San Juan County, and it's now been joined by six other counties in northern Washington. You can get a building permit for a new home with rainfall catchment as your sole and entire source.
Well, maybe you can back up a little bit and explain to people what is rainwater catchment.
Okay, rainwater catchment is taking water, according to the legal terms in Washington, capturing water from the roof of a structure not intended only for the collection of rainwater. Or in other words, you don't put a building up to collect rainwater. You're collecting rainwater off
from a building you already have.
Yeah, you're collecting rainwater
from
a building you have, or a barn or a shop or whatever.
Okay.
We're using the cleanest roof sources we can, which in most cases is standing seam steel.
Okay.
And we're taking
is that like ceramic coating?
Ceramic coatings are fine. The tile you have a lot of here would be fine. And we're putting it into storage, taking out as much organic matter as we can before it goes into storage.
So why do you use these specific types of roofing materials?
Other roofing materials may have contaminants. Some of the asphalt shingles, some of the three-tab roofing may have copper, may have zinc. Just ran across a company that made a high-end composition roofing that had formaldehyde in it. So,
so good for living things.
We don't take the risk. And when you get into copper and zinc roofs, our rainfall is very acidic, not as acidic as yours is here. And the acidic rainfall will leach copper and zinc out of the roofing and put it into your system, which is not that good for us.
Okay, so basically what you're looking for is a chemically inert, physically stable material that's not going to bleed off bad stuff into the water.
Exactly.
Okay, well, that makes good sense.
So basically we're taking all of the organic contaminants out that we can. We're taking out the
leaves,
pine needles, worms, frogs, and we don't always tell the customer what lives in their gutters, but there is livestock.
You don't want to know.
There's livestock in your gutters. We want everything out that we can, except for maybe pollen and dust, to store. Then the water will not go bad.
Okay,
then we don't have a quality problem. The water stores very well.
Okay, so if you get clean water into your... I'm assuming that you're talking about tanks of some kind.
Yeah, polyethylene tanks, metal tanks with a polypropylene liner, lots of different storage systems available.
Hmm.
So we're getting it into storage and holding it, and the Australians have found that rainwater, if left in a still fashion, or in other words, when you're putting water in, taking water out of a tank, you don't stir it up,
mm-hmm.
the quality will improve and it will actually disinfect itself for the most part
in about
a week.
What's the process there?
Magic? No, not magic. You're going to have with the pollen and the dust you get on the bottom, and plus it's come off a roof where the birds have pooped and everything else has gone on.
Mm-hmm. Everybody poops.
Everybody poops. You're going to have a little layer, a little biofilm on the bottom of that tank. The Germans like to call it a Schmutzdeck, which I think is a cool word. But
Schmutzdeck?
Basically, you'll have a little biofilm on the very, very bottom of the tank, maybe a quarter inch thick, maybe a half inch thick.
That's a pretty thick film.
Yeah, but you're not taking your water off the bottom of the tank. You take your water from 8 inches and higher.
Okay.
So that little layer on the bottom will process a lot of the organic matter that falls in the tank.
Oh, huh. So it's actually bio-purifying itself.
Yes, they're good cooties.
Huh. Cool.
Yeah. So that's what we do going into storage. And then once we've figured out how much storage we have to have, depending on where someone lives, how long of a dry period they may have, how intense the rainfall is, then we bring the water into the house doing sediment filtration, usually 1 micron. We can talk about that in a little bit. And then doing carbon block filtration, which will take out taste.
Oh, I like the way that sounds.
Taste, odor, and most of the chemicals we have in our society. And then we do ultraviolet disinfection.
Wow.
And the water quality is better than anybody's bottled water.
Huh. That sounds pretty good.
It's neat stuff. In fact, is there are 3 people bottling rainwater in the country now.
Huh. If you're just joining us now here on Out of the Box, I'm speaking with Tim Pope. Were you one of the founders of ARCSA?
Close. I'm old enough, but...
you knew him.
I was the first elected president of the association.
Okay.
No, the first 10 years of the president... was just kind of there, and the organization has grown. I've been at it probably longer than I should have, longer than I have good sense, but I've gotten pretty good at it.
Well, I'm glad you're here with us today. Again, this is Tim Pope from the American Rainwater Catchment System Association. A little bit of a mouthful, but what it really boils down to is helping, I'm assuming it's mostly residential work that you do.
There's more and more big commercial jobs being done. I've been mostly residential. I've done more potable systems than most anybody else in the country. Most of it's being done for irrigation.
And explain to people the difference between potable water and
potable water for irrigation.
Potable
water is water that meets the EPA standard for safe drinking water.
All right, so potable means you can drink it.
You can drink it.
Safe for drink.
Yeah, drink it, shower with it, brush your teeth with it, whatever.
Okay.
So there are some uses where they will use untreated rainwater for toilet flushing and doing laundry.
And that would be, what do they call that, white water versus gray water?
No, not gray water.
Not gray water.
Gray water is a big issue with us because everybody says, oh, you're doing gray water. No, gray water comes out of the shower and out of the lavatory.
Ah, so
and
that's...
the laundry.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the water coming out.
See, I'm glad I asked that question.
And then we had people say, well, then you're doing reclaimed water. No, we didn't reclaim it from anybody.
No, it came from the sky.
It's a new source.
Right, straight from Akua.
And then they say, well, it's water reuse. No, we're getting the first shot at it. And, and then on the other side, we'll have people say, well, then you're taking water from the system.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and we had a caller who called me last week who asked about that. Because I put out the word, hey, we're going to have this guy from the American Rainwater Catchment System Association. He's going to be here. We're going to talk about that. And he's like, well, is that taking water out of the watershed?
We have some people that think it is. We have some engineers that think it is. It's an interesting myth. If we're living on rainwater in our house, we're taking the water, we're intercepting the water, using it, and putting it back in the aquifer through our septic system.
Recharge.
Yeah. So okay. We're recharging. So there's less evaporative waste. I'm not going to call it waste. There's less evaporation. There's less evapotranspiration going on.
Sure, but I mean,
when you're putting it right in the ground.
Right. It's not waste because it's desirable to have a certain humidity in your environment.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a good use of the water. We found, did a little bit of testing, and I'm not going to go into it too far, but on Orcas Island in the San Juans.
Another beautiful island.
Yep.
Shaped like a big horseshoe.
Shaped like a big horseshoe.
I love that. They have a little hot springs there on Orcas Island. It's great. A bunch of hippies all naked. Fantastic.
Well, we have to have them.
Yeah, no.
Need them.
Amen. Amen to the hippies out there.
That's right. So,
and the hippies in there.
In there. So basically, we have found that if you take a bare piece of property with forest on it,
okay,
and you take a piece of property that you've cleared and drilled a well.
Well, hold on a second. I'm a little slow.
I'm doing three pictures here.
Yeah. So you say a bare piece of property. That just means property that
hasn't... Nobody's developed it.
Well, yeah, it's unadulterated by civilization.
Yeah, it's forest. Okay. It's
naked,
greenery, whatever.
Pure.
Then if you take a piece of property with a house on it and drill a well to supply the house, and then if you take a house with a catchment system and supply the house with a catchment system, you'll actually get more water back in the ground with that house and the catchment system than you would with the bare native forest.
So why is that?
You just have less runoff, less stormwater issues. You're getting it back in the ground. Stormwater is a big component of this.
I guess.
Stormwater is a big part of this.
The reason why you have more water is because you're catching it, and then you're keeping it on that land.
And you're putting it in the ground over 6 months
versus 9 months or 3 months.
Or
letting it run off.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that makes sense.
So the big surge is going to tank.
And that's actually pretty consistent with some of the basic foundational pieces of permaculture, which is to... Slow the water down,
and if you can do a catchment system, get it back in the aquifer, you're actually enhancing stream flow, which for us in the Northwest is a big issue with the salmon.
Well, it's a big deal here too.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people like to famously think of Kauai as the wettest spot in the world, and that's true.
Only on 20 square feet on top of the mountain.
But it's not. It's an area not even as big as a football field where all that rain is falling.
Yeah.
So it's an incredible intensity of rain in this one spot. But I think Maui gets a greater total quantity of precipitation on its island than we do here.
Probably, and if you go to the Big Island, Hilo's 129 inches a year, and Kona's 13?
Yeah, that talk about rain shadow.
A dramatic difference.
Yeah. The Kona parts of the island, those are the leeward parts of the island. That's Kona on Big Island is the downwind part. And then here on
Barking Sands.
Exactly. That's Kona on Kauai or Mana. And that's very dry here as well. The microclimates are amazing.
Well, and especially on this island, I was looking at a USGS map the other night of the Lihue watershed in a period of 8 miles, the average rainfall goes from 39 inches a year to 430 inches a year.
Yeah, that's a lot
in a couple miles.
Yeah, so then that I think that would be a challenge for someone trying to design a water catchment system for, let's say, a family of four or six here on the island, because. Well, there's two sides of the equation. It's easier to figure out how much they're using, but I bet it's trickier because the climate, the microclimates are so subtle here. How do you measure how much rain they're going to catch for the size roof they have?
You need some local experience. You need some common sense. You need to look at what the trends are, what you see out the window. I was just down the road here a little bit, and it was pouring on the mountain over there.
Right.
The one with the waterfall and no top?
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And that's
isn't
the
that
microclimate.
Isn't that beautiful?
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Yeah, it's incredible.
But when you look at microclimates and stuff, you just have to kind of use common sense. California, they, you know, they're having a terrible drought. They're in their fourth year of a drought, and California has way more problems than they even realize.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, because they over-budgeted the Colorado River, and they have more people in line pulling water out of there than comes down the canyon.
Well, not just the Colorado River, but we're growing 430,000 acres of rice, for God's sakes, in the Sacramento Valley. And you have to keep those fields flooded all year, and if they weren't irrigating, it's a desert.
Yeah,
anyway.
And I don't know if anybody told them, how many people live in L.A.?
Oh, I don't know.
Some
way too many.
Some crazy million. I don't know if anybody there knows it, but that's a desert. Okay? Really, it's not a great idea to live in desert.
I would be willing to say, and this is being picky, I suppose, but I would be willing to say that 90% of the population, if you turn a faucet on and water comes out, everything's fine. If you flush your toilet, everything goes away. That works, too.
Yeah, that's
usually
good.
Nobody looks at the source or the destination.
Well, so many things in our society are made and created by decision makers who are elsewhere. You know, our democracy, one of our problems with our democracy is everybody says, okay, well, we elect these people, and then they take care of the problems. Well, you know, who watches the watchers? If you're not engaged in the situation, you're not going to understand how it works.
Well, and unfortunately, in Southern California, you've got you know, they're short of water. They're crying for more water. We need more water. But every time it rains, the big cement box by the L.A. airport's full of water going out to sea.
Right. And
so there's a disconnect.
And they're watering their lawns, and they have water features and golf courses and trout farms and la, la, la. And it's like, hey, folks, you live in a desert.
Lake Mead is something like 35 feet above the intakes for powering or for making electricity. It's that low.
Say that again, because that's pretty incredible to digest.
Lake Mead is so low.
Well, first off, tell people where Lake Mead is.
Okay, Lake Mead's on the Colorado River on the Arizona-Nevada border.
And it's behind a great big dam.
Great big dam, a Hoover Dam.
Hoover Dam, one of the biggest concrete structures in the world when it was
made. Seventh or sixth or fifth, whatever wonder in the modern world. Lake Mead has not been full for years.
Hmm.
And right now it's so low in water that the water that they generate electricity with in the dam only has 30 feet ahead above the intakes.
Oh, that's not a lot ahead.
No, so if that thing drops another 30 feet, then L.A. will be running out of electricity also.
They won't have electricity to pump the water they need to drink.
And even though this is an aside, interesting number, 26% of the electricity consumed in California is consumed pumping water.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
They use more electricity than most countries.
Yeah. Yeah, California, gotta love it.
Yeah.
Unless you don't.
Right, unless you don't. Every time I do a workshop up in Canada, I tell them that you guys are so lucky. You have fewer people in your entire country than we have in California, and you better build a fence.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. A lot of people in America are trying to build fences to keep other people out, but fences go both ways. And
that's
good,
right.
Good fences make good neighbors, and bad fences, not so good.
Yeah.
We've got a caller standing by, I think, if I can make this happen. Press this button here. Hello, caller. Can you hear us?
Hey, how you doing?
Oh, wow. I did it.
You did it. That's amazing, Jonathan. You're getting better.
Wow. Live and learn.
There you go. Hey, this is a great question for you and your guest today. I've been told, unconfirmed, that water catchment is illegal in Kauai County.
Water catchment is legal in Hawaii, according to the Hawaii State Department of Health. It was unregulated for a lot of years, and there are some systems on the Big Island, on the east side of the Big Island, that are just hideous. There are also some good ones.
And there's a lot of rainwater catchment over in Hilo side.
Well, yeah, you drill
well, groundwater. You get
steam or red stuff.
It's strictly a Kauai County thing. I think this is something that Kauai County has done on its own.
Huh, interesting. What was your source on that, caller?
You know, it's gone back for so many years, I can't even remember what the source came from.
Huh.
I know, and this is probably ninth hand or something or other, but someone just told me that there's some kind of a catchment system being built in Lihue that they've just let bids on and granted one.
Hmm.
Now, whether it's for potable or just for irrigation or non-potable use, I don't know.
Hmm.
Yeah, that would be an interesting question to find out from the county.
Well, I would be interested, caller, if you can let your finger through some walking here in the next few minutes and try and track down that a little more information about that. That would be pretty helpful.
And I would be interested.
I will.
All right.
And I would be interested in knowing, because that's one thing ARCSA does, is we like to get out and push people until they can realize what they need to do.
Well, thank you for calling in, caller. And if any other Akamai or smart listener out there is aware of what that last caller was just mentioning, please do call in at 826-7771. I'm Jonathan Jay. You're listening to Out of the Box here on Kauai Community Radio, and our guest this afternoon for a little while longer is Tim Pope, former president of the American Rainwater Catchment System Association. And we're very pleased to have you here. You're going to be doing a workshop in water catchment design tomorrow and Saturday. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, tomorrow and Saturday, and actually we'll be doing a workshop next week on Maui, and we'll be doing one in Kona late next week. I'm over here to do three islands, and I'm also going to be working with Sea Grant on improving the quality of some of the catchment systems on the Big Island. But we're doing a workshop here, a two-day workshop. It's to give you the skills to design and install a rainwater catchment system, and it basically qualifies you to become an ARCSA accredited professional.
Hmm. If people want to find out about that or figure out how they can get involved or sign up or whatever, how can they contact you?
Best way, you know, and I'm on island now, and I answer the phone whenever it rings. Can I give a phone number?
Absolutely.
360-317-4192.
Let's say that again.
360-317-417-4192.
And that's for Tim Pope.
That's for Tim Pope. And my kids taught me how to make texts, so I can text now. I'm old.
Welcome to the 21st century.
And also my email is water@interisland.net.
Okay, we'll be repeating that information later. But I wanted to actually write it down real slow, because that way the person who's listening can also get their pen and their paper, and they had a chance to write down 360-317-4192. And that's to get a hold of Tim Pope, who's my guest this afternoon, from the American Rainwater Catchment System Association, who's going to be doing a workshop. Now, this is a professional design workshop. This isn't just like, hey, rainwater catchment, it's really neato. Here's a picture my four-year-old nephew drew. Doesn't that sound like a great idea?
We get a few homeowners. Most of the people we get in the classes are engineers, architects, permit planning people with counties and cities, irrigation contractors, landscape architects and contractors. That's been our main audience. We always have a couple of folks that want to build their own system, which is fine. This works for them, too. But we're trying to get the engineers and stuff educated out there, because the ones that aren't, I've seen some engineered systems that are just awful, and they don't work.
Well, you know, engineers typically know how to crunch the numbers well, but sometimes they don't understand the design parameters.
They don't have the numbers.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you want to make a holding tank that's going to be able to sustain the load of the volume of water you want to store in it, that's one thing. But, some of the ways of, like, what? Purifying the water,
disinfecting, and you'll bring it to whatever standard you need. There is plumbing and building code in place now through the Uniform Plumbing Code for rainwater catchment.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something we've worked on the last 5 years, and we do have code in place. So if someone says, well, you can't do that here because we don't have the code for it, call me. We have the code for it.
There was a caller on the line just a moment ago. I didn't have a chance to quite get to the phones. I'm running the show solo. So please do call back if you have a question or comment or want to join in the conversation this afternoon at 826-7771. And if you're listening online somewhere around the world, say in Palo Alto or in North Platte or Astoria, Oregon, give us an email at dj@kkcr.org. And be happy to try and read your comments or questions on the air. Okay, I'm going to go to the phones here and see what we can do. I think we maybe have two callers on the line. Is that right? Can you hear me, callers? How about now?
Hello, John.
Hey, aloha, caller.
Yes, could you ask your guest, is Tim?
Yes.
Yes, Tim, what the pH of the long-term storage over, say, a month or two in one of those poly barrels might be?
The pH is actually not that good on the mainland. Average pH on the West Coast is 5.5. You get back east, it's in the 4s. Average pH for you folks here in the islands is 4.5 to 5, unless you're on the Big Island and the vog is happening, and then your pH will be 3.5.
May I ask you a personal question?
Sure.
Have you lived in the islands?
I've lived in the San Juans for years. I haven't lived out here.
Right. Do you ever experience the SAD phenomena?
That's an acronym, isn't it, caller?
Yeah, for seasonal affective disorder.
As I get older, I give it a little bit of validity. Now, you know, even though it doesn't rain as much in Seattle as people would like to say it rains in Seattle.
Oh, and
it gets a little gray.
Yeah, it does. Yeah,
and in the winter, the days are a little short.
Yeah, very. Sometimes, I lived in Seattle for 24 years, and sometimes that sort of gray, that pale gray light that sometimes it announces that the dawn is coming.
I call it oogie.
Yeah, well, sometimes the oogie lasts all dang day long, and it's like 1, 2 o'clock, and it's still that weird gray color. You're, like, waiting for the day to start, and you realize it's getting darker.
Well, but the upside to that is you wait until June, and you
don't tell people about that.
You can work yourself to death out in the yard.
Well, Jonathan, did you ever use a supplemental light source to augment the lack of sunlight?
Incandescent, compact fluorescent, LED, candle.
You did use that, eh?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's dark. especially in Seattle, when I grew up there in the 80s and 90s, you're going to go down into the basement and start rocking out with your friends. You need lights down there.
Look at the suicide rate in Alaska.
Yeah.
It's dark.
Yeah, it's real dark.
Yeah, well, idea. That's, you know, when you consider all the... I heard a lot of drinking and in Alaska.
Did you have a question or comment about rainwater?
Well, but thank you for this important topic. I'm interested to see if that previous caller gets an answer about the legality of the catchment.
As far as I know, it's legal throughout Hawaii. Now, if Kauai County,
there you go. Good job.
Not Kauai. This is in Texas. Kauai County. Has done something to throw some roadblocks up, then I would like to get involved and help people remove those roadblocks. Because it's a win-win if you do rainfall catchment. There's no detriment. Every now and then you'll have a water purveyor say that it cuts into their profit margin.
I'm trying to figure out the phones here just for a moment. We've got another caller calling in. I want to get line two on if we can. Let's see if this will work. Aloha, caller, you're on the air. Oh, I guess we got to hear him hang up. Phone lines are open at 826-7771. I'm speaking with Tim Pope of the American Rainwater Catchment Systems Association, and we're talking about rainwater catchment system design.
Right. There
you go. We got a caller here calling again now. Aloha, caller, can you hear us?
Yes.
Oh, good. Thank you for standing by.
You're welcome. Thinking about what the one caller about said about the legality, and I do remember, oh my God, it was 100 million years ago. We're talking probably 6, 7, 8, 9, even up to 10 years maybe on Carlos's show. Someone saying something about that it was illegal, because I can remember going, what the heck? How can it be illegal to catch water? So I don't know if it's changed since then, and even if it hasn't, like, in terms of if your gentleman friend says it's a state law that you can, then obviously that supersedes it, because the secret state law supersedes our no GMO law.
Well, and you would think so, and if the state of Hawaii says it's okay, and the Department of Veterans Affairs now will loan money on a house that is supplied by a catchment system, there's a lot more validity. You know, where I was up in Washington State the last 20 years, for a while it was illegal, you had to have a water act, and we got that hoop jumped through. Colorado is the last state I know of that has drugged their feet. Colorado now says that if you live on a well, yes, you can have rainfall catchment to supplement or replace your well. But if you live within the confines of a PUD or a water purveyor or a municipal water service, you have to meter your catchment system so you can pay them for the water you're not buying from them.
Oh, God, how stupid. Sorry.
That make a lot of sense. Yeah.
So explain that again. This is like people who have a water monopoly and they feel they're guaranteed to get a certain...
The PUDs in Colorado are very strong. Colorado is very strong on water law. They're the source of a lot of everybody else's water. They look at, well, for the longest time, they looked at doing catchment as taking water from the system. Well, you're not. You're borrowing it. You're intercepting it. So basically, their PUDs up there, their income comes from the sale of what they purvey.
Right.
And they look at rainfall catchment as being a threat to their bottom line.
Yeah, because it's allowing people not to be their customers anymore.
Yeah, and at the same time, or on the other hand, I don't know if I said that right, they're selling water for next to nothing. We give water away. The fact that water is as cheap as it is, and I've heard people say, oh, well, I won't pay any more for water. I won't stand for it.
Yeah, well, you try going 2 or 3 days without water.
Try going without it.
Yeah.
It's the only resource we have that we can't replace with something else.
Well, there's the atmosphere. That's a good one.
Well,
yeah.
We haven't done too well with that either.
Yeah.
Well,
but
the atmosphere does contain water.
There you go.
Do you have any other closing comments, caller?
It is there somewhere. Maybe Carlos will hear all this and can chime in. And I do remember there being something. And it might have been similar, like, to Colorado. However, in my mind, if the state of Hawaii says you can, then you can, because just like they said, sorry, the, just like the companies that got it, that we, they didn't have to follow our rules here because, you know, our law here, because the state supersedes us, then that means the state would supersede even if we had a law.
Well, those are complicated issues to untangle, but thank you very much for calling in, and do call again.
Okay, bye.
All right,
bye.
Aloha. Yeah, so what about all that?
Oh, it's interesting, some of the takes on this. We, you know, we have water districts that embrace rainfall catchment. City of Seattle has a combined stormwater sewer. Every time it rains hard, the sewage treatment plant can't handle the water.
Right, you have overflow capacity.
Sewage gets discharged in Elliott Bay, which is a threat to the salmon issue. Untreated sewage.
Yeah, untreated.
Which is a threat to the salmon issue. And right now, Seattle loves to have people put in rainwater catchment systems because they're intercepting stormwater.
Well, and it's also it's decreasing the amount of surge. It's moderating.
It's taking
the
top off the curve.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah. So a lot of cities are embracing it that way. And stormwater is becoming a bigger and bigger issue. There's an office building in downtown Seattle that houses 1,500 people during the workday. It meets 95% of its water need from the roof. Now, its water need is flushing toilets for 1,500 people.
Well, you know.
The other 5% is making the coffee to make them have to go.
If people want to get a hold of you for the catchment workshop tomorrow, your number is 360. That's a area code out in what?
Washington
State, yeah. But you've got your cell with you here.
Oh, yeah.
360-317-4192. Well, we're kind of coming to the close of being able to talk about this, and I want to thank you for coming in. But I wanted to see if you had anything to say additionally about living off the grid.
Living off the grid, doing an off-grid system, especially here where you've got, even though you're in a drought, you've got fairly consistent rainfall here. You get 2 inches a month minimum on this side of the island. You can live off the grid with a tank next to your house, a solar panel on the roof, solar panel running a pump that pumps to a day tank up in the attic of the house that might contain 50 or 60 gallons of water. And there are 12-volt UV systems available, so you can be disinfecting that day tank all day long, and then when the sun goes down, you've got 60 gallons of treated disinfected water to use at night. It's easy.
Yeah, that sounds pretty cool. How much water does somebody need in a family of six?
When I do a water budget for people, I will basically work out 50 gallons per day per person for indoor household use. This is no irrigation outside, no car washing, just indoor household use. Now, when you get past four, you can cut that down a little bit, down to maybe 40 gallons per day per person, because the washing machine is shared.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Doing dishes is shared. I've got 280 potable systems on the ground, whole house potable systems on the ground. I've only had one person run out of water, and she's a sweet lady, but she's a serial bather.
Well, hygiene's important.
Absolutely, but she was out of water.
So if you have a family of six and you want to have 250 or 300 gallons for the household per day, and they live in a standard 1,000-square-foot house, and it rains 50, 60, 80 inches a year.
Okay, one inch of rainfall is going to give you 6/10 of a gallon per square foot.
I have no idea what that means.
It's a half gallon per square foot. So if you live in a 1,000-square-foot house, an inch of rain is going to give you 620 gallons of water.
Okay.
If you live in a 2,000-square-foot house, it'll double. So if you get, let's say you're getting that 600 gallons of water from an inch, and you get 50 inches, so, you know what, it's 30,000 gallons of water.
So is 30,000, but do you need a tank that can store 30,000 gallons?
No, you need a tank that's going to carry you through your longest perceived dry period.
And what would that roughly be?
In this area,
I know that's the whole workshop is about figuring this stuff out.
I'm going to guess on this, on the east side of the island, you're probably looking at, if you guys have seen a month without rain, that's probably a long time.
Mm-hmm. Happens, though.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. You go over to Barking Sands, it's going to be much longer. I know in the Northwest, we want 90 days of storage because we have a 90-day basically dry summer. You get down in California, they want 120 days of storage.
So what would a 1,000-square-foot roof for a household of four adults where it rained you know, the
giving
one,
me a math problem here.
What's the scope? What's the range? What kind of a system are we talking about? What would that expense ballpark? What are we, you know?
You're probably talking about maybe having 3,000 or 4,000 gallons of storage,
okay,
which isn't a lot.
How big of a tank is that?
A 3,000 gallon tank is 9 feet high and 8.5 feet in diameter.
Okay, so that's not gigantic.
No. And they don't have to be right by the house. You don't have to make them ugly. You can put them back. Well, you guys don't have blackberries, but we have blackberries. You can hide them in the blackberries.
I see.
Because once the tanks are installed, the tanks don't take any maintenance.
Mm.
It's the collection, the conveyance, and the distribution system that takes some maintenance.
What about mosquitoes?
You need to make sure that your tanks will not admit mosquitoes. Of course, one of the biggest problems people have, they have gutters that don't drain anyway. So the gutters are sitting full of water.
Oh, right. So then you're introducing larvae.
You're
in
doing it
way.
Anyway.
Right.
But you want to make sure that the tank is screened, that the collection system is screened, and if they have gutters that are sloping the wrong direction, they probably ought to be reinstalled.
Well, it's not only fascinating, I think it's terribly important for people to better understand. So I'm really glad that you've come on to Kauai and you're going to be conducting this workshop, and I'm sure mine and many more technical questions are going to be addressed. Is there anything that you'd like to leave us with that for folks to know?
With the quantity of water declining, not just in California and Washington State, but here, you guys are in a drought. You've got less water available. They're not irrigating as much as they used to with the sugar canes, which was an artificial way of increasing the aquifer. So with the water quantity and the water quality, because when they were doing so much ag here, there was there's a lot of nitrates in the well water here.
Mm-hmm. And DDT and really toxic chemicals.
So the water that comes out of the sky is far cleaner to begin with than the water you're getting out of the wells.
Interesting.
And it's very easy to treat, very easy to maintain.
So how can people find out more or get involved in this workshop tomorrow?
Give me a call. Send me an email. I don't have a life. I answer the phone whenever it rings. So, just get in touch and we can figure out how to get you there.
All right. And if you have any questions, you can call me at the station or send me email. jjkauai@gmail.com. Tim Pope, thank you so much for coming in and speaking with us. This is really a fantastic service that you're providing to the community.
And Jonathan, thank you for inviting me.
My pleasure. Coming up next, we're going to be speaking with Karen Baldwin, one of the candidates for the KIUC, Kauai Island Utility Cooperative. She's one of 8 candidates who'll be running. Your ballots are going to be due in a couple of days. So if you haven't made up your mind yet, this is a really good thing to tune in and try to listen to. You're listening to Out of the Box. I'm your host, Jonathan Jay. We'll be back in a minute with Karen Baldwin.
Sounded great earlier. Oh, yeah.
If you're just tuning in, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon on KKCR's Out of the Box. I'm your host today, Jonathan Jay. Just spoke with Tim Pope of the American Rainwater Catchment Systems Association, all about a rainwater workshop that's coming up tomorrow. If you want to get a hold of him, again, his number is 360-317-4192. And his email is water@interisland.net. Coming up next is our guest, Karen Baldwin. She's a private attorney on the island. She's an incumbent board of director on the board of directors for KIUC, the Kauai Island Utility Cooperative. And she is one of eight people running to get reelected. Eight people running for three slots and for a total of nine people on the board. Karen, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Really appreciate you coming on.
Thank you for asking me, Jonathan.
Yeah, well, it's a big deal. Power really matters, and the more people who understand the issues, the better informed we can be as a community to make good decisions, not only with the strategic direction and leadership of the cooperative, but in the ways that we ourselves use electricity.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. I think that's one of the places that, you know, one of the areas that KKCR, this is too many K's.
Yeah, it's a lot of K's.
Yeah, it's a lot of K's. The KIUC can do a better job. You know, on the mainland, you can caulk your windows and doors and so on and get a good shade and make lots of difference in your heating bill. Here, you know, caulking doesn't really apply.
And we don't really have heating bills.
Right.
so that's a blessing.
Yeah, so it's kind of harder to find those ways to save and to encourage people and let them know about how they can lower their bill by using less.
Well, what is the biggest typical use in a residence, in your household? What is the number one power sucker in our homes?
Well, I think you were talking about it earlier today. I think
yeah, but that was offline before the show, so nobody heard
that.
So
we have to tell everybody.
Exactly. Well,
yeah, I think probably a hot water heater is number one, unless you have a really bad refrigerator or freezer or something like that.
In which case, you might have a bill like Harold Diaz Jr., who is also running for the board.
What's his bill? I didn't hear that.
Oh, it was over $700 a month.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, crazy. Well, he blamed it on his four near college-age kids.
Yeah, I blame it on them, too. They're probably running a lot of hot water.
Yeah, lots of showers. But he also said that after he kicked them out and they went to school, he also swapped out all his incandescent light bulbs for LEDs. So that was an efficiency measure. That was an investment that he made, and he got a return on that right away. He sent in copies of his electric bill, and I would encourage you to do the same thing, too, so that people can see if you're walking your talk. But he was able to cut his bill in half.
That doesn't surprise me. That does not surprise me. One of the things that KIUC has been doing the last 2 years is passing out these light bulbs,
mm-hmm.
and they make a huge difference. We see it in the overall numbers when we go through the budget each month.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a 20% decrease, and we're all saying, what's the decrease in use? And it's attributable to those light bulbs.
20%?
Yes, that's huge.
That is. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So if...
And I'm... Wait.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm happy to reveal my... I didn't realize you wanted me to send it in, but I'm very, very proud of my energy bills. The one a month ago was $129.71.
Oh, that's pretty good.
And the most recent one is
$113.38. Oh, yes. Mine was $123.91.
So
you got me beat there.
But you're only one person. How many people live in your
home? Oh, we got a couple electrical suckers in my home.
So anyway, I was going to say a hot water heater, a solar hot water heater is a huge savings in electricity.
Now, maybe you can explain to people how having a solar hot water heater saves electricity, because they don't use hardly any electricity.
Well, when you have a 30 or 50 gallon tank that stores water and you want it hot when you're ready to take a shower.
I do.
Yes, I hate cold showers. And you need to keep it warm then all the time it's in that tank. You
yeah,
need
so,
to keep that
so it's
50 or 30 gallons warm.
Right, so it's ready for go.
Right, so that's where you're sucking a lot of electricity.
Oh, so if I'm understanding you correctly, you're saying that if you're not using electricity to keep all of these gallons of water hot all day long and all day night, if instead you're using the sun to heat the water, then you're not using that electricity.
That's exactly right.
Hmm. So if...
And Hawaii law says that you can use the sun.
Right.
Unlike Colorado water law.
Well, if everyone on the island were able to get a solar hot water panel for their home domestic hot water use, what impact would that have on the total electrical consumption?
You know, that's a really good question, Jonathan, and I don't know the answer to it. I do know that, and I want to talk about KIUC's program to help you install a solar hot water heater. There's a very good rate of interest on a loan to do that. And it reduces your electric bill, as we've discussed.
Well,
I have no idea if everyone did it, what the impact would be.
Well, I do know because I penciled it out last week.
Good for you.
Well, you know, I like to try to come prepared.
Yes.
So if everybody in the island, you know, I think there's about 35% of residences have solar hot water already, so you can't count them.
Right.
And I think the residential electric consumption is about 40% of the total, so you don't count that other 60%. But if you pencil it all out and you get solar hot water for every single household, it works out to about 7 to 10 megawatts of power that you have freed up. You're not using it anymore to make water hot, which in the tropics, you know, it's kind of a dopey thing to do. So what does that mean? It means that all of a sudden, by putting solar hot water panels on the houses, you just built another biomass plant.
That's exactly right.
But you didn't have to spend $90 million to do it, because $90 million will get you a lot more solar panels than burning trees.
Right.
So that gets us to the question of the diversified portfolio approach. Maybe you can explain to listeners, what is a diversified portfolio?
It's the portfolio refers to sources of electricity, and there are traditional sources such as diesel-powered engines. As you know, we have a naphtha-powered engine, if you will, jet engine.
Yeah, big jet engine.
Right. We have a very small amount of hydro. I think it's about 2%. As you mentioned, we're bringing a biomass. Well, it's not ours, but we're going to start purchasing power from a biomass plant. So my point is that there are a number of different kinds of energy sources, and that's the diversification of a portfolio.
So, but with the new strategic plan, we're talking about a diversified portfolio of alternative energy sources. So maybe you could explain a little bit about that.
I'm not sure when you say alternative.
Non-petroleum.
Right. Which doesn't necessarily mean renewable and sustainable, which is a major interest of mine.
Hmm, maybe you could explain the distinction.
Well, for example, liquefied natural gas is not a renewable, sustainable resource. It's not fossil fuel, but in other words, I wouldn't consider it's an alternative, but it's not renewable.
Hmm. Well, no, I think liquefied natural gas, that's definitely a petroleum product, byproduct.
A byproduct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, the reason why I brought up the diversified portfolio is that if we make demand reduction one of the components of our diversified portfolio, the creation of megawatts as, you know, being able to supply 20 or 30 or 40% of our electrical consumption, I mean, that's incredible efficiencies, and the whole island saves because every watt that we don't generate is one less drop of oil that we're going to burn. It's one less hydro plant that we're going to divert water from. It's less Albizia factories that we need to construct. It's the leanest, greenest, cleanest way to go.
I agree with you completely.
Well,
that soapbox is taken.
Fantastic. So I guess if I were going to vote for you as one of my directors for the board of directors, that's a message that I would desperately want you to convey to the other directors.
That's what you'd want to hear.
Yeah, it really is.
Mm-hmm.
What are some other things that you will do as a director?
One of the things I will do, Jonathan, has to do with the whole cooperative business model, and I know you're very familiar with it. I believe in that model, and I will encourage participation in every way I know how. In decision making at KIUC, you know, listening to the members, the owners of KIUC. That's a very, very important goal for me, and not necessarily second, but on the same level is bringing on more renewable, sustainable energy. That's important too. I agree with you completely that we need to look at demand side.
It seems like so often all the engineers are all excited about supply side solutions to our supply and demand challenge, but it's very hard to get four of a kind if you're only playing with half of a deck. If you're only looking at the demand or the supply
right.
side,
you're missing a whole. You're missing a huge opportunity.
You're missing half of the picture.
Sure.
So
some of the accomplishments of KIUC in the last 2 or 3 years.
Well, if I actually could ask you to hold on to that thought, because we have to do a real quick station ID, and I think that people will be very excited to stick around to hear about some of the accomplishments of our co-op. So I want to tell listeners that you're listening to KKCR Honolulu, KAQ Kilauea, and that this show is brought to you in part and made possible by fine underwriters like these.
KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, K224CQ, Moloa'a, K284AL, Haleiwa.
Announcing the return of the Tahiti Nui's Hanalei Lu'au, featuring 50 years of songs and dances as a tribute to their mama, Auntie Louise. Tahiti Nui, providing live Hawaiian music on Kauai since 1963. This family-style Lu'au is every Wednesday, 5 to 7:30. More information at 826-6277 or online at thenui.com.
And mahalo nui loa to Hawaii Life as well as Tahiti Nui. It's folks like that that help us not only survive but thrive and bring you the kind of community radio that this community deserves. On the line with us right now is Karen Baldwin. She is a one of eight candidates running for the KIUC Board of Directors, the Kauai Island Utility Cooperative. They're the big I don't want to say big boys, but they're the ones who are making the most electricity on the island and distributing almost all of it. So I want to thank KIUC for keeping our transmitter going. If it weren't for you guys, we wouldn't be on the air right now.
Well, thank you. If you moved to a more open space, it would be easier to keep you on the air, Jonathan.
How is that?
Well, up here on the North Shore, you're kind of, you know, you're way back in there, and trees could fall on you. All these bad things could happen.
Oh, yeah, that's true. But maybe you don't know, but I'd be happy to share, that we've got a bunch of transmitters all over the island in the Anahola Moloa'a region is the 92.7. And I bring that up because that's a place where KIUC has made a large-scale strategic investment in creating more supply on the island. Why don't you tell people a little bit about that, and what do you think some of the positives and what some of the concerns that you have about that may
be? I'm not sure what you just asked me, Jonathan.
Oh, I'm talking about the big solar farm.
And what, the description? I mean, there are two solar farms. There's one over in Kalua, which I think they... it came online the end of last year,
mm-hmm.
and then in process is this big one at Anahola. Have
right.
you seen that?
Right, that's what I was referring
right.
to.
A lot of construction jobs going there, and I think that's going to be, as I recall, the finish date for that is mid-year next year. Two big projects. KIUC has more solar than any other utility, period. It's something we can really be proud of.
Sure. I mean, keep in mind that's only in America. That's not counting the rest of the world, who has been far more progressive on renewable energy than the United States has been. But, you know, hey, we're not doing worse than we are, which is good. Do you have any feelings about the way that KIC is using all the land on the Hawaiian Homes land to produce electricity?
You mean where the solar farm is?
Yeah, because when I asked the same question to Stu Burley, who's another person running for
mm-hmm.
office, he said, my answer is that I'd like to know how the Hawaiian community feels about this. What are they giving up to let KIUC use the property? Are all the Anahola residents in agreement? Who will lose their home in the future? Who cannot build their home now on lands that are covered with solar panels? I stopped by the site, and wow, that's a lot of land taken away from the Hawaiian people. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, there was no taking of that land. It is leased. The Hawaiian Homelands leased the property to KIUC. It's a long-term lease. The Hawaiians are paid a certain amount each year. They're, you know, I can't describe the entire contract to you, but there's a payment that KIUC makes in addition to the lease that goes for certain projects and that sort of thing for Hawaiian Homelands. And then at the end of the lease period, the Hawaiian Homelands can take over the PV field and own that themselves, or they can renew the lease. But that land belongs to Hawaiian Homelands, and that hasn't changed. Nothing about that PV field changes that.
I think there were some concerns about the way the meetings were held in terms of getting to that agreement. I was told by a caller last week on the show that some of the meetings were held about the Anahola property over on different islands, and so it made it very difficult for people in the community of Anahola to have input about what was happening right next door.
I don't know about those meetings. That astounds me if that's true.
Mm.
And also, Jonathan, if we're going to set the bar at 100% of people agree with, you know, what goes on at that Anahola side, you can't get 100% of people to agree, you know.
Well, yeah, 100% of people typically aren't going to agree on something, especially
right,
if it's not in everybody's interest.
Right. But the people who represent that community, you know, were in negotiations, so.
Yeah, that was definitely the case, but the people in the community themselves were very concerned about it, and I believe a majority of them felt quite negatively about the project that went ahead anyway. I think it's a great idea.
Do you think they still feel negatively about it?
Well, you know what? I can't speak for them.
If
someone is listening in Anahola, a 92.7, please do call in at 826-7771 mm-hmm. and share your perspective with us. I want to ask you where you feel KIUC most excels.
I think that probably KIUC's biggest strength is in its CEO and its staff. They have done an incredible job of being really flexible in a very difficult economy, making some really good decisions. You know, and it's great when they come out to be really great decisions. I think that you could talk to virtually anyone, and they would be describe what, you know, what this cooperative has done, and they'd be very pleased, and I think the members are very proud of it.
Well, I think that KIC definitely has done some things right. We've got a caller on the line right now. Would you like to take a question?
Sure.
Okay, hold on a moment. Aloha, caller. Ken, you're on the air.
Yeah, I just was listening to you guys on the radio.
Yeah.
You know, I Hawaiian, all that land. They tell that we're getting money. What money we getting? We're staying. What projects they putting them in for benefit the Hawaiian people? They say the thing they only lease in the land, and then when the lease is up, then we can take them back. We can take them and run them. But we will run after all the years. The thing will be there, gonna be all rotten and no good for nothing. So what we gonna run?
Do you want to stay on the line, caller, or do you want to listen to the air? Her answer off the air.
I'll stay off, but. There are plenty of people who are dying on the list, and they're waiting for some place for stay.
Oh, yeah, wait listers, yeah?
Yeah, and they're giving the lands to these guys, get money, and the land's supposed to be given to the people. And they get this thing that you gotta make qualifications to purchase the home to be on the land. What is that? What Hawaiian get the kind of money they're asking for? These guys get the money. So I don't like to stay on here, but as my output, and they just... They just said, shove this thing down the Hawaiian people, especially guys in Anahola. They shove them down our throats. Everybody said no, but yet they do.
Well, caller, I want to thank you for calling in.
Okay. Let me just say
that we're you're listening to Out of the Box with Jonathan Jay. Our guest on the line here is Karen Baldwin, one of eight candidates running for the three open seats on the KIUC board of directors. How do you respond to what that caller just said?
Some parts I can't respond to because I don't know the rules of Hawaiian Homelands and the distribution of land and so on. I mean, I know parts of it, but I'm not an expert on it. I do know that title to that land, it continues to be in Hawaiian Homelands. It is a lease to KIUC. And if, as the caller said, at the end of the lease term, at the end of 25 years, it's all just junk out there, then the Hawaiian Homelands can say, get it out of here. Take it out, remove it. We don't want it. So there are lots of options. I hope that's pretty clear. I also hope that there were a lot of jobs created.
Well, I know there's a lot of jobs, a lot more jobs created with the biomass plant, because you need people to, you know, hoist chainsaws
right.
around and chop
right.
up and process the trees for fuel. But how many jobs are created after the solar farm is built out? How many people do you need to squeegee the panels?
Exactly. Not that many. And these jobs were temporary jobs, but they were jobs. There's also a component to the lease agreement is an education program, you know, that will take place there and on the Hawaiian homelands. I mean, all in all, I think I liked a lot of the aspects of the lease. I thought it was a win-win.
Well, what do you feel are the special abilities, insights, experiences, and skills that you bring to the board of directors that, if you weren't there, might not be there?
Well, I hope that I'm an ear for the members, and that would be one less ear if I wasn't there.
Or maybe two, yeah?
Two, yeah, depending on if you're a Van Gogh or not.
All right.
I think that, as I said earlier, that I really value the cooperative business model, and that may have less emphasis if I weren't there.
How so?
Let's see. I guess I would say that there's some traditional ways of doing business, conducting meetings, you know, making decisions, and the cooperative model is different. And sometimes we fall into, you know, we're creatures of habit, and we fall into doing things the way we mostly know how to do them rather than taking a look at a cooperative model and involving more people in decision-making.
So I'm trying to discern what... Are you saying that KIUC as a co-op does not always live up to its ambitions? Is that...
I think KIUC is a new co-op, and it is learning every year about the co-op model and how to do it better. And as it matures, I think that there won't be such a need to continually emphasize the cooperative model.
I think that you're probably right about that. It's a relatively young organization, and it's an organizational model that doesn't have a long... There are not lots and lots of co-ops on the island.
Right. This whole idea of equity in the co-op, I don't think very many members understand that they, in fact, own it.
So please explain that to us.
I'm sorry, say that again, Jonathan.
Please explain the concept of equity, and how is it that members own the co-op? Because that's kind of a big abstraction.
It is, and I'm not going to... there isn't a CPA who would approve of this description. Okay?
Yeah, but they're not running for board
right,
of directors.
Right, exactly. So, as you know, when KIUC purchased the assets of its predecessor, the transaction was 100% financed.
So what does that mean?
That means that, you know, the analogy is if you're going to go buy a house, normally you can only loan or borrow 80 or 90% of the purchase price. You have to put some of your own money in.
Some earnest money down, yeah,
right.
Okay.
In this case, there was no earnest money down.
None?
Yeah, so it was an act of faith, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, and now the co-op has repaid that purchase price down by 20 to 25%. That's equity that belongs to the members.
So here's the question I have about equity, and again, neither one of us is a CPA.
Do I get a chance to say, wait a second, I can't answer any, this is too much depth for me?
Sure, but I mean, I think it's really important to point out to the listener that as a director, you don't have to know all the nitty-gritty about how to run turbines or how to convey electricity or mm-hmm. amps or volts or all that stuff, because there's an amazing team of accountants and engineers and linemen and staff that run the day-to-day operations of the co-op. The directors, you guys are big picture stuff, yeah?
Absolutely.
So here's a big picture question about equity.
Okay.
If we, the members, own 25% of our co-op, who owns the 75%?
The lender.
So,
in this case, Rural Utilities.
Okay, so here's my question. If KIUC was like a normal corporation that had stock, the members would have a 25% share of the stock.
Right.
And the who owns the 75?
With a corporation, it could be lenders also have the other 75%. It could be
but in our case, you said it was who, the
shareholders versus the members. I mean, members are pretty much like shareholders in a corporation. Is that the question you're asking?
Right.
Sure, but where you're going with this?
Right. No. Where I'm going with this is, if the members on Kauai own 25% of our co-op, who owns the 75%?
Well, the other 75% is represented by money owed to our lender.
So, who is that?
RUS.
That's the Rural
Utilities Services.
Okay, so am I then correct in understanding that we are a minority owner of our own co-op and that RUS is the majority owner?
No. I don't think that's
what I like better understand.
No. I think, let's go back to the analogy of purchasing a house. If you put 10% into your house, you own 10% of it. Who owns the other 90%?
The bank.
That's right. And the same is true here.
Okay. So when are we going to own a majority share of our own co-op?
We own 100% of the co-op. You know, what I'd like to do, Jonathan, is, I hate to be stammering and stuttering around, but I'm not really the person to talk to about the equity management of KIUC.
Okay, well, that's fair enough.
I hear what you're saying.
That's fair enough.
Yeah.
So one of the things as a director you can do is help people with like me with questions to go to the right person.
That's well said. Absolutely.
So I would appreciate that, and I'm guessing that's a service that you'd be willing to offer to all of our members, yeah?
Sure.
Well, I want to thank you so much for coming in and talking about your understanding of the co-op, and I'd like to give you an opportunity to make some closing comments to make your case for why people should vote for you.
Well, I think it goes back to your question, why do I want to be on the board? I think that I bring some cohesiveness to the board. I've been involved with KIUC since 2005. I think that I work well with, I play well with others, and I think I've worked well with the current board. We continue to do that. I value the cooperative model and will be an advocate for that. And I think I have the decision-making abilities to, as you said, design the big picture, the strategic plan. And Jonathan, thank you very much for inviting me to be on. I appreciate it.
It's my honor and pleasure to make this service available, because I believe that only through having, you know, frank, straightforward discussions and asking questions and trying to get answers, and maybe we don't have all the answers to the questions, right. but it's...
And I really appreciate the caller who called in and explained, you know, a position that maybe I haven't heard before. Thank you.
Well, I want to thank you for being so open to speak with the community and to engage with the community, and I want to wish you and all the other candidates the best of luck with our co-op, because we really need good leadership.
Thank you.
Well, thanks so much.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Again, that was Karen Baldwin. She's one of 8 candidates running for the KIUC Board of Directors. Every single member, every single person who has a bill whose name is on the bill gets a chance to vote, and there's 3 ways you can vote. You can return the ballot that you got in the mail like a week or two ago in the envelope provided. You can go online to mrgvote.com and enter the access codes, what you got with your ballot materials. Or you can go on the telephone and use a touchtone phone and call 877-778-KIUC. Let's see, what is KIUC? Well, you'll have to look on your phone to figure out what that is. But there's several different ways you can do it, and you got to hustle. Oh, here we go, 877-3... Oh, this is for more information. If you want more information about anything that you heard from Karen Baldwin or any of the other candidates in earlier interviews, you can call KIUC at 877-324-7655. And the important thing to remember is the deadline to vote is March 14th, and that's at noon. That's coming up soon, because what day is today? The 12th. So Thursday, Friday's the 13th. Ooh, and then Friday, Saturday at noon. So if you want to vote for Karen Baldwin or Stu Burley or Bill, what's his name? The guy who was on a couple days ago. There's a lot of really strong candidates running. Pat Gagan is another one. Harold Diaz. Well, I've got them all right here. Dennis Isaki, Patrick Gagan, Jan Kimura, Bill Peterson, Dennis Rowley, and Karen Baldwin. So please do vote. It really does matter. And your deadline for that is coming up pretty quick. It's Saturday at noon, so get them in. We're going to take a little musical break, and then we'll be back with more Out of the Box on the station that loves you, Kauai Community Radio. You're just tuning in right now. You're listening to Out of the Box on Kauai Community Radio, KKCR.org, the station what loves you. And you know what? What a great thing that it is that we have a community radio station. I'm so honored and pleased to be able to work with so many good people here at the station, the people who make the equipment run, who keep the gear in good operating shape, the folks who keep the transmitters running, and then listeners just like you, who go to kkcr.org, click on that donate button, and help us continue to thrive. It's really a wonderful opportunity for me to do what I do for you guys, and I thank you so much. And I want you to know that the phone lines are open at 826-7771. We can talk about whatever you like. So I think we've got a caller standing by here. Is that right?
Yep.
Okay. Let's punch the button here. Aloha, caller. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello. Thanks so much for calling in to 826-7771. Or if you're far away, you can always email us, dj@kkcr.org. What's on your heart? What's on your heart, brother?
This is Jim Kelly at KIUC.
Hey, hello, Mr. Kelly. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you doing?
You know what? I think I'm doing pretty good. How do you feel I'm doing?
Well, it's great that you've had the candidates on the last couple of weeks. I'm really happy that they got some time to explain their positions, and I really appreciate you telling people about the deadline, because it's coming up on Saturday.
It really is. How many people, what percentage of the membership do you expect to vote?
We usually get around 25%, which is pretty high by co-op terms. You know, we always hope to get more than that, so I'm assuming we'll probably get about that same this year, but hard to say until Saturday noon.
Well, I hope that many people participate. I know this year, unlike several in the previous, we haven't had any public campaign forums or debates, and that seems a little bit like a missed opportunity.
Well, it is. KIUC has never put those on. Those have always been put on by the community, and I know the newspaper used to do a lot more with the candidates than they do now. There was a story in today's paper, but, you know, our history tells us that most of the ballots get voted pretty soon after people get them in the mail, so having a Q&A with the candidates 48 hours before the election, I don't think is especially helpful, but every little bit helps.
Well, it does. And I talked with several other of the volunteer programmers and community affairs volunteers, and we all agreed that next year KKCR would love to coordinate with KIUC earlier on in the process so that we can make sure that there are several forums or debates or discussions, because these issues are so critical, especially because it's cooperative. I mean, if we don't have smart members, it doesn't matter how many smart meters we have.
Yep, that's a terrific line. I wanted to call also just to mention something I know I've heard you talk about the last couple of weeks.
Oh, please do.
And you brought it up with Karen again today about the Anahola project, because I think there's a couple of points that I think are important to know. You seem to be suggesting that this project just kind of came out of nowhere and was approved in the dead of night by people that didn't have a stake in the project, and that's absolutely not the case.
Well, please tell your side of the story.
Well, I was. I'm ready to do it now. Am I on now?
It was awful. I can only
imagine. Are we good to go?
And then after.
Okay. So in 2009, after a three-year process, DHHL came up with a master plan for Anahola that called for a renewable energy project in the place where our project is right now. All of those documents are online on the DHHL website, and you can see the map. There were never intended to be homes put there. It was always part of the master plan that was developed by the community. It didn't have anything to do with KIUC.
Really? That's curious to me, because I thought the whole idea of the Department of Hawaiian Homelands was to put Hawaiian homes in Hawaiian hands on Hawaiian lands, but maybe I got it wrong.
Well, no, but it's also about coming up, and if you can look on their website, one of their key strategic goals is to come up with uses of land that can also generate income for DHHL so they can put it back into the community and put in roads and infrastructure that are needed with the houses. I mean, it's more than just the houses, and renewable energy is one of the top areas that DHHL identified that they wanted to get into.
Well, that certainly makes really good sense. So then I guess the question comes down to, well, how good of a deal is it?
Well, I assume it's a pretty good deal since DHHL approved it, and it's something, as Karen was talking about, at the end of the lease, they're going to own this solar project that they can do with what they want. They can use it to, they can sell the electricity to us. They can, depending on what the technology is at the time, they can use the electricity to power part of Anahola. They can decide they want us to take it out of there, and they can use the land for something else.
So after what period of time is this?
It's 25 years.
And then what is the warranty on the panels? How long are they supposed to last for?
Well, the panels are supposed to last for 20 years at least.
Oh, so that's
fine. It's not going to be a piece of junk after 25 years, if that's what you're suggesting.
I'm just asking the questions, Jim.
It'll be at 100. Well, we want it to be at 100% output for its entire life. The other thing I want to mention, because you were part of this, there was a meeting at the Kapaa Elementary School last February 6, 2014. Remember, you were there? It was about the project. It was by DHHL. It was an informational meeting. There were about 150 people there.
Was this over in, where was this?
It was at Kapaa Elementary School.
Kapaa Elementary. Yes, yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah, and
I don't remember shaking your hand that day, though.
I was there. I was sitting there. I saw you there. I thought I waved at you, but maybe you didn't see me. There was a presentation by DHHL and also by KIUC about the project. It had about 40 people, I thought, got up and spoke about it, and there were people that had concerns about it, as you articulated. But there were also a lot of people that thought it was a good thing for the community and a good thing for the island.
Well, I think it is a great thing for the island to bring more renewable energy onto the island, because the dollars that we save by not purchasing oil get to stay in the community. So that's a great thing. I'm you know, support that 100%. That's one of the supply side solutions that I think that is great for us to, you know, obtain.
Right.
But then there's the demand side
right.
of the question, which I don't see KIUC putting as much effort into. And it seems to me like since the demand and the supply always have to equal each other exactly, that we should be putting as much energy into supply side solutions as we are into demand side solutions. But You're not running for KIUC Board of Directors.
No, I just wanted to be clear because the last couple of weeks I keep hearing you talking about how this project was essentially forced upon the Native Hawaiian community. No one in Anahola wants it there. The majority of people, and these are your words, are against it. And
well, that is factually accurate. The majority of the people that I saw at that meeting didn't think it was a very good deal. I didn't say anybody forced anything on anyone. That would be you putting words in my mouth.
Well, I've heard you talking about this the last couple of weeks, and you're basically suggesting that it was some kind of a process that did not involve the community.
Well, I'm really glad and heartened to hear that you listened to the show. That's fantastic. Thank you so much.
Well, where else am I going to find out what's going on in the community, right? Well,
that's like an endorsement. Thank you, sir.
Absolutely.
So here's my question to you. If it's such a good deal, what is it? How much is KIUC paying the DHHL in lease agreements each year?
I don't know off the top of my head. I know it's like $130,000, I think, a year. And it escalates. We're also paying to put in a road. We're also paying, as Karen said, for job training and educational programs. And that's money that wasn't there a year ago.
Well, I really appreciate you calling in and helping the listener, get more information about what's going on with our co-op. I think that we all win when we have a better understanding of things. So I really appreciate you calling in and sharing the knowledge that you have.
Great. Well, thanks for taking my call, Jonathan. Take care.
Oh, it's a pleasure. You take care too. And the phone lines are open at 826-7771. If you have any concerns or questions or issues, the phone lines are open for you. We can talk about KIUC. We can talk about surfing. We can talk about how lovely it is to be in Kalalau. It's up to you. This is your community radio, your community station. I've got a caller. Go ahead, caller. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm curious, your last, the guy from the KIUC.
That was Jim Kelly, and he's a very talented individual.
Okay, she's a very intelligent guy, I know, and I'm just wondering, the money that he's talking about that they're paying, is that coming from us, the co-op?
I'm not privy to the financial details, but I would assume pretty comfortably that your question is yes.
You know, I remember I used to get a little rebate. You know, it wasn't much for my electric bill. I haven't really noticed it lately. It was maybe once a year, I guess. And maybe one time it was $40 or maybe another time it was $60. But I haven't really noticed it lately. But it's just there seems to be a lot of money being spent, and the co-op, we vote these guys in, but very few of us vote them in because it doesn't give a great turnout.
You're breaking up a little bit, caller. Can you stand in a better place?
Yes, I can.
I think to answer the question that you raised a moment ago, the lease payments that KIC makes to DHHL, that's all part of the cost of doing business and the cost of generating the power from the photovoltaic panels. So that's part of the expense that adds up to the 10 or 12 or 14 cents a kilowatt hour that it's costing to generate power at that plant. Does that kind of make sense?
Yes. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Better spot?
And I hope that I'm speaking correctly.
Then my other question would be then you asked him about, they were going to give the panels to the community, I guess, after their lease was up.
Yeah, he said after 30 years.
Okay, I thought he said 25.
Oh, you know what? I think you're correct. Pardon me.
Okay. Then, but the life of the panel...
He said was 20 years.
Yeah, I didn't know if it was 20 years after the lease was up or before.
He said it was 20 years. And let me... Hold on a second. I'll get some paper here. I'll do some math. Let me see. 25 minus 20...
That's 5 years negative.
Hold on. I almost got it. Five.
Yes. 5 years negative.
Oh, you're right. It is 5 years negative. Huh. That's kind of... So after the panels are piled, you can have them.
Right. Right. And, you know, there might be some really good pieces, and maybe they'll last longer, but maybe not, you know.
Yeah, maybe they could use them as, like, roofing panels or something.
Oh, God. Anyway, you know, some of these projects that they do, and I'm not trying to tear them down. I don't know if it's really beneficial to the community like they say it is. It's beneficial to their agenda. You know, and I agree, you know, personally that lands for Hawaiian homelands, you know, I think that there should have been more input from Hawaiians, you know, if that was going to be land that they would be able to build on.
Well, you know, building houses for Hawaiians is not in the mission statement of KIUC. So I don't think
Hawaiian homelands for that matter. I mean, you know, if you want to get real.
Well, you know, I would actually love to learn a lot more about that. So I don't want to be tearing down KIUC. I just want to encourage my co-op to be a good neighbor and to play nice with others, as Karen Baldwin was saying, and to malama each other and to be a good neighbor in the community, because that's a co-op that I could be real proud of. And I think that everyone on the island would agree.
Yeah, I agree with that, you know. I just think there's a lot of decisions being made that what I'm saying is we are voting in these guys, but not many people are voting. I think he said 25% of the members are voting. That's super low. So there's a bunch of people out there that aren't voting the members in, and decisions are being made. That means we're getting these guys approval to make these decisions on our behalf.
Yeah, and that's why I took great efforts to get the several different candidates on. I talked with the other community programming show hosts, and we all agreed on a little format and made a space available for as many candidates who wanted to come on the air. I think it's terribly important for us as members of the community to learn more. You know, if we don't understand what KIUC is doing or the county or whomever, it breeds distrust. And I think that relationships of trust can be built by sharing information, by having good communication, by having transparency, by having honest discussion, by asking questions and getting answers, and really, you know, working together to get everyone's needs met. That, to me, that's a success.
Excellent. Yes. Now, can I change the subject? I'm going to get off the air pretty soon.
Yeah, please do, because I got another caller standing by.
The other thing that I read in the paper this week that was pretty mind-blowing was Beth Tokioka going to be working for Syngenta, and I just find that, wow, it just kind of blows my mind. I mean, here she was kind of behind, you know, the mayor.
Well, she was the communications director for the Carvalho administration and the three administrations beforehand, you know, going all the way back to Brian Baptiste. And from my dealings with Beth Tokioka, I've always found her to be very competent, skilled, and done a very professional job for the people she was working for. I have every expectation that she will continue in that vein. Why does that blow your mind?
You know, because the mayor vetoed, you know, 24-9-1, and I just think it's a conflict of interest, but in the opposite direction.
Well, I mean, Beth Tokioka was not on the payroll of Syngenta when he vetoed that bill.
It's true, but it's like Carlton Ching, that's running for Department of Land and Natural Resources, who came from Castle and Cook.
Sure, he's the governor's Ige's nomination for the head of the DLNR.
Exactly. Well, it's almost like it's the kind of the same thing, but going in the other direction. Instead of her coming from Syngenta to the county, she's going from the county to Syngenta. Syngenta laid off a ton of people.
Well, it was only 23 people, and if each person weighs like an average of 200 pounds, that would be more than a ton of people, actually.
But I just find that really interesting that she was kind of in the ear of the mayor in making these decisions when 2491 was going around, and now she's actually working for Syngenta.
And she was also
been working for Syngenta this whole time is my point.
Well, it's interesting that she was with the former Economic Board of Development. Is that right?
I think so.
Yeah, and so the person that she's replacing over at Syngenta is now stepped into that job again. So if you are thinking it looks a lot like a revolving door, it's only because they're going around and around.
Yeah.
So I'm going to thank you so much for calling in and trying to get to this next caller. We only have like 20 minutes left. But thank you so much. And do call again.
Okay, I will. Bye.
Got another caller standing by here. Aloha caller, you're on the air. Thanks so much for calling into Out of the Box. What is on your heart?
It's in my belly. I just wanted to thank Mr. Kelly for providing me a good belly laugh in his description of the deal. It was a community-based deal for the Anahola Solar Project.
Well, okay, so that was his understanding. That was his impression. Well, what is yours?
I don't recall him being at any of those meetings, the public meetings. I was there, and I was at many non-public, private community meetings, and it was obvious that what happened was DHHL is a state agency. They're in desperate need of money. KIUC saw a sucker, and they threw him a bone. DHHL took whatever money was offered to them, and the Hawaiian community in Anahola got a big fat zero. Not only did they take the land away from them for potential home sites, they didn't even provide them reduced electrical rates. So not only did we take their land, we're taking the sun that lands on that land, feeding it back into the grid, and selling them the electricity at the same rate that you and I pay.
Okay, well, that is a view, and there are other views. There's another caller waiting right now, standing by. I'd like to get him on the line as well. Can we get both the callers on at the same time? All right, aloha caller, you're on the air. Thank you so much for calling into Out of the Box.
Hey, Jonathan, it's Dave Vissel, CLKIUC. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you so much for calling. I had no idea you were a listener.
Hey, I try to listen when I can, Jonathan.
Oh, that's great. Well, what have you heard some of the discussion we've been having?
Yeah, it seems like you're trying to stir up a controversy around Anahola, and Mr. Asquith has called in a couple times with his kind of inflammatory comments, and I'd like to put a few things on the record.
All right, well, I would think that it would be really wonderful if we could get your view of the situation.
Well, I'll give you the actual view.
Well, it's your view.
No, this is not a view. This is fact. This is contractual.
Okay. Well, more information is great.
25. Can I talk, please? The 20 versus 25-year, whatever the life of the panels, nobody really knows how long panels are going to last on a solar field. They may last 40 years. They may last 25 years. Beauty of it is on this thing, and this is a negotiated deal with DHHL. KIUC didn't come in and take anything. It was a business deal. And ultimately, what it comes down to is DHHL negotiated. They wanted the things at the end or have the option to take them over. They either decide, hey, this plant works, it's going to make money for us, we want it, or guess what? They say to KIUC, you guys have to remediate the whole site, put it back the way it was, and take care of it. It's a total option to DHHL. There's no sticking the Hawaiian community with that. If it's going to make them money, if they want it at the end of the term, they can have it. If they don't, we got to take it and put it all the way back to the way it was before it started. So there's nothing nefarious about the sticking them with assets at the end. That's totally their option.
Well, thank you for clearing that up. Yeah, okay,
is,
please go ahead. I just want to interject. I really appreciate you calling in. I think it's really wonderful that you're sharing this information with the community. So thank you.
Well, I don't like false things out there in the air. It's not helpful for anything. So I appreciate that. And you guys have a good show. And thank you. Take care.
All right. Thank you so much. So that was David Bissell, the CEO of KIUC, Kauai Island Utility Cooperative, calling in to add a little more information to the discussion. And, hey, you know what? That makes for a better discussion. Are you still on the line, caller?
I am. I just want to thank Mr. Bissell for confirming exactly what I said. It was a straight-up business deal between KIUC and DHHL. It had and has no benefit nor any support from the Anahola Hawaiian community.
Yeah, somehow you guys just aren't agreeing.
Oh, I agree with what he said 100%.
Oh, well, so then how is it that you have a different understanding of the consequence of the facts?
I don't have a different understanding. It was DHHL benefits directly from the money KIUC paid them as a consequence of the business deal that was cut. That is totally separate from Anahola Hawaiian community benefiting. And Mr. Bissell didn't address that.
Hmm. All right. Well, I think we've got another caller standing by. Aloha caller, are you on the air?
Aloha.
Aloha. Thanks so much for calling into Out of the Box. You know, it's not often that we get so many really great informed perspectives from the actual decision makers of the issues that we're discussing. So we're quite fortunate today. What did you want to add or question? What comment do you have?
Well, I'd like to, without taking away any credit to the Anahola Hawaiian community, I'd like to draw attention real quick to the fact that DHHL does not represent the entirety of the Hawaiian community, and in fact has subjugated the Hawaiian community, 49% of the Hawaiian community, the portion that does not fall under the blood quantum policy that they have in place to be considered a Hawaiian. That portion of the Hawaiian community sees DHHL and what they do as an oppressive entity that has discarded their identity away to the wayside like garbage.
Maybe you can explain to the, maybe you could explain, if I get you to back up a little bit, explain this thing called the blood quantum and what it is and what the effect is.
Blood quantum is a policy that the United States government has set up through Congress for Native Hawaiian peoples, Kanaka Maoli peoples, to have to qualify. It's a blood quantum policy that requires Hawaiians to prove that they have 50%, 50.1% Hawaiian blood. So they have to, Hawaiians have to be able to show and trace their genealogy through their birth records to be able to prove that they have the required blood amount.
So if you're only a quarter Hawaiian, then you're not really Hawaiian?
If you don't have at least, if or can't prove that you have 50% Hawaiian blood legacy, then you don't qualify to be a Hawaiian. And there's a huge significant portion of the population. And many of the people who were at the DHHL meetings that they had when the solar farm was being discussed were a part of that community who were speaking out because of the fact that they have relatives who are on the waiting list, who do qualify, who are their grandparents and their aunties and uncles passing away. You know, they don't get to have a piece of property, yet foreign companies are profiting off of that money. And the representatives who are sitting in the seats at DHHL are not representing the entire community whatsoever.
Maybe you could explain. Go ahead.
You know, that's just the beginning of the problems that we're seeing with what KIUC is perpetuating by engaging in business with the Department of Hawaiian Homelands. And it goes for the same with any other company who would enter into with the Department of Hawaiian Homelands. What you're actually doing is you're funding the perpetuation of this blood quantum policy, which, by the way, before I go and will be my last statement, the Kanaka Maoli community is the only community in the entire world that has this blood quantum policy delegated to them anywhere.
Well,
the only community, the only race of people in the world who has this blood quantum policy upon them to qualify to be anywhere.
Well, before you go, because you mentioned briefly in passing something called waiting on the list or the wait list, and I don't think that a lot of people know about what is this list and what is it for and why there's an entire population of people now who are called waitlisters, and that's because they've been on this list for 10, 20, 30, 40, or more years.
The process...
Explain to people what is this list, and what are they waiting for?
Well, the list begins with the process of signing up to be recognized as a Hawaiian. So you submit your papers and your request for a piece of property, you know, your blood quantum, along with an application. And once your paperwork is received, then you're put on the list to receive lands.
So this is Hawaiian homelands, yeah?
This is for the Hawaiian homelands.
All right, so exactly. These are the Hawaiians who don't have homes, who want homes on Hawaiian lands.
Well, not necessarily. You know, we're renters. We're treated just like anybody else is treated for the most part amongst the community until we qualify to be a Hawaiian. Then we get to go sit on the wait list. And in the meantime, we wait.
Yeah, like for decades, not for like 1 or 2 weeks or 18 months or something like that.
You know, anybody who has an idea, I can't give you the exact date at the moment. We're talking about in the 50s, Hawaiian homelands, somewhere around there, maybe, being started. And so, yeah, guys have been on the list since then, passed away. And, you know, the blood quantum policy doesn't end with the initial applicant, though, you know. The land lease, it's a lease. You never get the land. You're able to use the land, but you're subject to the lease and what the DHHL determines.
And that's the Department of Hawaiian Home Lands. These are lands for Hawaiians.
Right.
Right. So I went to the meeting that Jim Kelly spoke of, and I went to another meeting in Anahola at the Anahola Clubhouse, and I was really shocked to hear people talk about how they've been waiting on this list to get to qualify for homes that the DHHL never build. So, I mean, you have like old aunties and uncles in Kupuna who've been on the list since 1952, whatever, and they like die in 1978, you know, and they still no homes. So, I really don't understand what is something is really fantastically not working.
Well,
there's
supposed to be a priority with the Department of Hawaiian Homelands, but as the previous caller had suggested, the department is in serious need of funding in order to be able to perpetuate itself because the state is in a poor situation as it is with its mismanagement policies, you know. So there you go. Business takes precedence over the priorities that have been edicted to the Department of Hawaiian Homelands in order for them to perpetuate itself. It's a vicious cycle that we see being perpetuated all over the place. And meanwhile, the folks in charge who have commandeered the seats, work in cahoots with the large business owners, corporations, deep-pocketed individuals who support those wheels of industry into perpetuating what we all end up enduring as hardship. Our electric prices are extraordinary here, and if anyone's spent more than a year on this island, they'll know exactly what the cost of living is and what it requires to be able to sustain that level of living, which is, in comparative to many places around the world, pretty decent. But at the same time, you know, for what American society is supposed to be used to, you come to Hawaii expecting to be able to support yourself like you do any place else in America, and you find out that there's a double standard hitting you from every angle, and the fee for being here is a lot more heavier than the economy can support.
Yeah, I don't know that there are easy answers, but I do know that if we all put our heads and hearts and minds together and begin listening to one another, solutions can emerge from that. And
I'll
so,
tell
ya. And
I'll
so,
tell
ya. Yeah.
I'll tell you. Great answer for me is take heart to the lessons that the indigenous peoples of the planet have been trying to share with us all along. You know, the indigenous peoples of the planet have always been the stewards of the planet. They've always known how to live in harmony with the planet. And for as long as civilized people have stepped forward on the planet, the indigenous folks of this planet have suffered greatly. And it's time that we held them up for who they are and what they are. The parents, our grandfathers, and the people who are responsible for this place more so than the civilized nations have been able to care for the land. And I think that all the people who are in the offices or controlling things, if we examine the concept of a seventh generation thing, I think all these guys who have been in power for a long time all understand that concept very well, as well as any indigenous nation who made a prophecy about seven generation peoples or wherever you may have gotten that concept from. The things that they did way back when, they knew that they were doing it for the future. And if we can all just come to a point where, you know, we're working like that for the betterment of the future, adopting the idea that whatever we borrow from our future today, we're leaving it as good as we got it for them today.
Yeah.
So that when they get it tomorrow, it's as good as it was when we got it yesterday, and so on. Hope you guys can catch on to that, and I'm just praying that our planet gets their head together. There is a solution out there, you know. There is a solution out there.
I think there's also, thank you for that call, caller. We're coming to the end of the show, so I want to try to wrap up. Just in response to what he just said, I think that there are lots of solutions out there, but I also feel that there's a lot of solutions in there, inside each and every one of us, and we're only going to be able to hear those solutions if we can get quiet within ourselves and then begin to listen very intently to others. Over the course of the last couple of years or so, there's been a lot of discussion about the Occupy movement and the 99% and the 1% and how we are perhaps intrinsically pitted against one another. But it doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to be that way. A lot of people have a lot of good ideas. I know I can learn a lot from you. That's why I feel so blessed when people call in. And that's why I feel so blessed to be able to have a radio show where people can, the guests that I bring in, that you can hear them and they can, you guys can call in and make questions and stuff. So, you know, the 99 versus the 1%, can't we do even better? Can't we go for 100% solutions? Think about that while you're flying around in the sky, yeah? Think about that when you're measuring your carbon footprint. And think about that when you start your garden and what it looks like from 30,000 feet. I want to thank you all so much for tuning in this afternoon. This is Jonathan Jay from KKCR Out of the Box saying aloha and a hui ho. And coming up next is Dove with Evolve. So stick around for that. It's going to be, as always, a fantastic.